Welcome to Soccer in 60, presented by the Empire Strikers. Get ready for your weekly look at all the pro soccer teams in Greater Los Angeles. We've got all the news and analysis you need, from LAFC and the LA Galaxy to the Empire Strikers, Angel City FC, and Orange County Soccer Club. Now, buckle up and enjoy Soccer in 60. Years before Mark Wahlberg became an A-list actor, he was a rapper called Marky Mark, and he performed with a group called The Funky Bunch. So I'm going to steal a line from his song, Good Vibrations, and mix it with some of my words and say, yo, it's about that time to bring forth the soccer and the wine. That's right. It's Thirsty Thursday, and we are all thirsty and wanting to replenish with some local footy. Soccer in 60 is here, your fix, and we are here to deliver some of those footy tidbits. My name's Christian Philemon, otherwise known as Philly, and joining me, the man whose beard would make former WWE pro wrestler Jim the Anvil Neidhart envious, Timmy K, and the man with more neck warmers than anybody in Southern California, J.R. Liebert, otherwise known as the Scarf. My friends, what is good? What is up?
Philly, it is a great Thirsty Thursday, and I'm glad you're dropping Funky Bunch references because not everybody gets those, baby.
No, I love it, and I love the Jim the Anvil Neidhart reference. Nothing like a good old-fashioned WWF reference, not WWE, WWF.
You got it, friends. Look, today's going to be a show packed with guests. We're going to be bringing in from the Defenders of the Bank podcast, JR, who you got? And we're going to do some Best 11 stuff. And our special guest today, Apple TV's MLS Season Pass pundit, if you will, and former U.S. Men's National Team MLS and Belgian Top Flight star, Sasha Kljestan, is on today. So stick around for that interview. But before we get started, Omnitrans, you're heading to the game? Hop aboard Omnitrans for a seamless journey to Toyota Arena. Simply download the Transit app and catch your bus and enjoy a stress-free trip to cheer on the Strikers. All right. In LAFC world, you're hot and you're cold. You're yes and you're no. Harnessing our inner Katy Perry and coming into this game against Sporting Kansas City on the road, we were rather cold, fellas, but we got kind of hot and it really counted this time around.
Look, it was a get-right win against the get-right club. They are brutal. Sporting Kansas City with 1 point on the season, winless in their last 12 dating back to last year. That was exactly the prescription that LAFC needed to get themselves back on the right side of things. The 2-0 win, it's feast or famine for this club recently, right? It's, oh my God, they can't score and they can't defend, or one of the best defenses in the league and look at us putting up goals. And we needed to do everything right against Sporting, and we did.
Yeah, David Martinez, the youngster, getting things started off of a dime from Marky Delgado. Tim, I know you saw that goal. David Martinez, an unbelievable talent, not even old enough to legally drink, still a year and change away from doing that. But what a grown-up goal he had. A golazo, bonanza, dynamite goal, beating Pulscan from Sporting Kansas City.
Yeah, and I knew that Marky Delgado was going to fit into LAFC quickly. He was going to play really, really well for the team. And dropping that pass in, it's what he did for the Galaxy, and now he's doing it for LAFC, and it brings a tear to my eye, both a little bit of good one and a little bit of bad one, because he's doing it for the noisy neighbors up north. But you got to give him credit. He's fit into the team really well, and like you said, Philly, grown-up goal out of a guy that's only 20.
Barely, not even really there. I mean, we couldn't toast with him if we wanted to, at least not legally. LAFC got bailed out by Hugo Lloris to close out the half, but then Aaron Long putting in the goal in the 54th minute. It was off of a free kick from under, an opportunity header by Ryan Hollingshead. Aaron Long representing UC Riverside smashes it in for the dub. Amazing opportunity, amazing sequence for LAFC. And I got to tell you, Ryan Hollingshead played himself a heck of a game. Guy could have had a multi-goal game with the way he performed, but beating Sporting Kansas City on the road, Children's Mercy Park, really solid way to, silence some of the LAFC critics. Sporting Kansas City would end up with more shots, but LAFC with more shots on target. Black and gold take care of business. And speaking of business, We got an interesting weekend ahead of us, fellas. We're taking on the new kids on the block. LAFC is a team that's undefeated when it comes to taking on new franchises. San Diego FC, 7:30 p.m. on Sunday. It's Snapdragon. It's awesome that it's not during the day because it could get quite hot there. Sucks that it's a Sunday night if you got work on Monday, but what are we feeling about Sporting? We just talked about Sporting. San Diego FC coming out of the gates really, really interesting. Wouldn't you say, Scarf?
Yeah, look, San Diego, they're full of it to start the season, right? They started out very well, undefeated in their first several matches. But you mentioned it, Philly. LAFC is 6-0-0 against new teams in their first match against us. That is an odd stat and an odd streak, and we know Steve Cherundolo doesn't believe in them, but what I do believe in is our ability to get right, and the way that we have been playing recently, I think that Sporting Kansas City match carries us right into San Diego. Look, it's a good thing we had a week off, right? Because not only do we have San Diego on the 29th, Miami then on the 2nd, then Houston on the 5th, then Miami on the 9th, then San Jose on the 12th. We're right back into a gauntlet just like we started the season off at.
Now, Tim, as our resident Galaxy guy, you're very familiar with San Diego FC. In fact, a little more familiar with them than us LAFC folk. The name Anders Dreyer, currently leading SDFC as far as goals are concerned. He scored 2 against the Galaxy. He's got to be one of the top players to watch.
For sure. And in that Galaxy game, Dreyer had that pass out of the his defending third and ran 60 yards. Ran just beelined it into the box and buried it against the Galaxy. He is the guy that LAFC is going to have to shut down to have any chance. Now, you mentioned, Scarf, 6-0-0 against new franchises coming in. That's an insane stat. But now that there's 3, 4, 5 games of film on San Diego, I'm thinking it's going to be a LAFC very hard fought one, because now you have film on San Diego, which the Galaxy did not have.
Yeah, listen, as long as we can keep Chucky Lozano from getting that engine going, I think the most interesting part of that match is going to be all the fans in Snapdragon, all the supporters, whether it's LAFC or whether it's San Diego. So many of them are going into that building to see Chucky Lozano play, and the way that the Mexican national team has been playing recently, that it's going to be at a fever pitch. It's just going to be such a cool atmosphere down there in San Diego for the first time, kicking things off down in Snapdragon.
Yeah, no kidding. Us fans of the U.S. men's national team are harnessing our inner Van Halen, because all we can think of is Panama, and not in the greatest of ways. Let's not forget, Scarf, Thomas Angel, former LAFC player. He's got 2 assists on the season, and a member that has competed for the United States men's national team that also has ties to Paul Wright, who was the head coach of the Empire Strikers and a legend at the San Diego Soccers, Luca Della Torre. So there are some ties to this podcast with some of these players on SDFC. Anyway, that concludes our LAFC segment. Folks, we're going to head into our interview with Sasha Kleschen. He's going to talk about LAFC, the LA Galaxy, and Orange County. But stick around, because after that interview, that's when we're going to open up the floor and discuss more about the Galaxy and OCSC. So let's go take a look at that interview that we had with Sasha. Take it away. Our guest today is an in-studio personality and analyst with Apple TV's MLS Season Pass. He is a former U.S. international who turned heads at Chivas USA before becoming a club icon and then winning 3 league titles with Belgium's RSC Anderlecht. He later won a supporters shield with the New York Red Bulls and also played extensively for Orlando City and the LA Galaxy, making an MLS All-Star game, 2 best 11s, and twice producing the most assist league-wide Gesundheit. We couldn't be more thrilled to have with us the pride of Huntington Beach and Orange County, California, Mr. Sasha Kleschen. Sasha, welcome to Soccer in 60.
Thank you very much, Philly. Damn, dude, can you just follow me around and intro me like that everywhere I go? That was amazing. Thank you.
As long as you bring me to the Apple Studios, I'm all for it, my man. First off, congratulations on your U.S. Open Cup brace. You're back playing with an elite amateur club, Des Moines Menace, alongside fellow ex-Red Bulls and current Apple TV colleagues, Bradley Wright Phillips, Dax McCarty, as well as other MLS alums like Benny Thalhaber, Ozzy Alonso, Matt Hedges, AJ De La Garza, to name a few.
We got an all-star team, man. It's been fun.
And you rocked it. You scored 2 PKs to help oust SKC2. How did you feel being out there, and Can we expect perhaps a Sasha Kljestan-led Menace TST team?
Ooh, I felt pretty good. It was nice to be out there with the boys, you know, living the dream one more time. Now we get an opportunity to do it again next Wednesday. But this time we get to play in Des Moines, which is excited, in front of our quote-unquote home fans. I think they're going to fill that place up and rock it, and it's going to be a good time. I don't think I'm going to play TST this year. I think I'm going to go on vacation to Europe with my family instead during that time off. But I got to play last year, and that was pretty fun. But listen, any game I get to play at this age, especially with so many guys that I used to play with, I'm just grateful.
At 39 years young, you still got it, my man. Now, let's dive into LAFC. I'm hoping you can help us make sense of their current state. Although we're only a few games into the season, we've already gone from saying it's okay, their offense isn't really clicking because they're defending so well, to saying they've lost three in a row because they're not playing well all around, to saying maybe they're back on track because they had a strong showing and a win at KC. Like, what are you seeing from LAFC on the field, and are you concerned about them at all?
I mean, you've spelled it out pretty clearly. My thoughts exactly going through the beginning part of the season. Some good wins, very good defensively. A couple of bad losses where the attack didn't look very good. The silver lining, I think, in all of this is that the West is weak this year. And I still think LAFC is probably the best team in the West. And I figure they'll come out on top in the regular season and be the number one seed in the West again. Question marks for Steve Cherundolo is trying to figure out who's his starting striker. By my accounts, it's not Olivier Giroud. He looks past it. He hasn't scored a league goal since he's arrived. He just doesn't gel with the attack, and he's not even completing passes right now. Honestly, it looks like he's a shell of his former self. So Cherundolo has to stay strong and either go with Nathan Ordaz or Jeremy Obobise up front. Young attacker David Martinez is coming into his own this season, I think, and is going to continue to push for minutes. Not really worried about their team because defensively they are very strong. I think they're the best defensive team in the West. And in the end, after all the chips fall, I think they still are the best team in the Western Conference.
So Sasha, you absolutely talked about it there right at the opening. The elephant got pushed out in the middle of the room. Is it just that Olivier is past it? Are they not using him well? I mean, you had this incredible partnership with Bradley Wright Phillips for so long over at Red Bull. You know how to get a true number nine the ball. What's going on at LAFC? Is it all of the above, a combination of things? What's going on with the Olivier Giroud?
Yeah, combination of things here. So first and foremost, to defend Olivier Giroud a little bit, he doesn't have any midfielders that play close to him. With the way that LAFC plays in their 4-3-3, all three of their midfielders are not, none of them are attacking midfielders, right? So Timmy Tillman and Marky Delgado are box-to-box guys who almost operate in like wide half spaces. No one's ever close and underneath Olivier Giroud. So I feel for him a little bit that he might be a little on an island and doesn't have a quote unquote number 10 to connect with. But having said that, he just looks like physically it's passed him by a little bit, which always happens to professional athletes at a certain age, and he's gotten there. And then he just looks low on confidence now because he hasn't scored a goal in a long time. It's like the simple plays he used to make, now it's like he's second-guessing himself, which is tough to see. You would hope that he just gets a goal somehow, and then that kind of breeds some confidence back into him. But I see him as a super sub now.
And what about LAFC's shiny new toy, Cengiz Under? He's played, you know, a really pivotal role. He looks fresh. He looks like he's moving a lot better than maybe an Olivier Giroud. How does he fit into what LAFC does? And then how do you think Steve Cherundolo has to manage all of those attacking options up front now that he's part of the flow?
Yeah, listen, Under looks very good and experienced, in my opinion. He just looks like he has more quality than any of the other attackers on the team. And if you look at his pedigree, you understand why. He will probably slot in at that right side, but with so many games coming up, you know, with the series against Miami approaching next week in the Champions Cup as well, you might see a little bit more of David Martinez, and I think he's got to rotate. Denny Bouanga seems to be fully fit and healthy and ready to go at 100 miles per hour every single game, so he's probably locked in on that left side. But I think you see a little bit of rotation probably up front between Obobise, Ordaz, Under, and David Martinez, which I think they have to do. You need to have some fresh legs in there, and they all have quality in their own in their own way. One guy we haven't talked about is Igor Jesus, who I think is awesome. I think he's been a very good signing. I think for a 21-year-old defensive midfielder to come in and have the courage to be on the ball as often as possible and try to push the game forward while also winning second balls and winning duels in the midfield, he's been very good.
Agreed. He's hard to dispossess, and I love that nobody can push him off the ball, contrary to what some of the other LAFC players struggled with last season. But transitioning over to your last MLS club, the LA Galaxy, I guess there are two ways of looking at it. The first being that they're unbeaten in three, which included an emphatic Champions Cup win over Herediano and two draws on the road. The other perspective being that four games into the MLS season, the current trophy holders are still without a win. What have you seen from them in their most recent games? And what would you say, they're trending in the right direction? And how crucial is Saturday's home game against Orlando, another club you played for?
Yeah, listen, I think I got to correct you. It's five games that they haven't won in MLS now. And so we're approaching week six here. There are two sides to the coin. I think you're spot on that. Listen, they've had a bunch of injuries and it's been tough sledding for them because Gabriel Peck is the only player healthy and on the field right now that scares any team that they're playing against. He's the only one who runs in behind. He's the only one who gets on the ball and dribbles past people. The rest of the players are all very similar in that they're just passers, right? They get on the ball, they pass, they move, they pass, they move, but they don't scare anybody. So I believe this weekend, Joseph Paintsill will be back and probably on the bench. I don't think he'll start, but at least having him to come into the game to be that fast player that stretches defenses and creates more space for other players to operate underneath is very important. Okay. Greg Vanney's paid a lot of money to be the head coach of this team. He has to figure out a way to win games. That's a fact. I understand there are injuries, but there's still enough quality on the LA Galaxy right now to be winning some games.
And speaking of quality, let's talk about the goalkeeper controversy. Kevin Baxter of the LA Times told us he sensed that it was going on. They tried out the young Mitrovic and they put veteran John McCarthy back in when Mitrovic struggled, which in itself, you know, not uncommon. But now some are questioning whether or not McCarthy, because he didn't look great at Minnesota's first goal. And at the same time, you still have former Quake starter JT Marcinkowski on the bench. Like, how much of a distraction do you feel all this is causing? And what would you do about it if you were Greg Vanney?
Well, listen, Greg Vanney created this controversy himself. If you're not going to start John McCarthy anymore, what you probably should have done was sold him in the offseason so that you don't have this headache. If you think Novak Mitrovic is the goalkeeper of the future and you want him to be your starter, then you need to get John McCarthy out of the building and sell him while he's at the height of his value coming off of winning MLS Cup. So they didn't do that. Mitrovic starts, doesn't play that well, makes some mistakes. Now you go back to John McCarthy, makes honestly one of the worst mistakes you can make as a goalkeeper last week in Minnesota, where the ball is going out of bounds. He touches it, brings it back into play, and the goalkeeper is there to tap it into an empty net. So Greg Vanney, it's on him to figure out this situation and choose which guy is his starter and stick with him. If it's Mitrovic, you got to play through the growing pains of starting a young goalkeeper. If it's John McCarthy, that's your goalie, but you have to be clear with both players as to where they stand. And I think both of them think that they're the starter right now.
You know, one last one about the Galaxy. We know Ricky Pooch has been out hurt, but losing players like Dejan Jovalić, Mark Delgado, and then having that all come under the guise of all of these MLS rules about salary restrictions and how it's difficult to keep things going after you win a championship. Do you think MLS should consider making changes to its salary cap rules, those bonus structures, all of those things that really seem to affect an MLS Cup winning team?
Well, listen, I have to push back a little bit on the fact that they won MLS Cup is the reason why they got rid of those three players. Whether they won the final or lost the final, they were going to have to get rid of those guys because they were up against the cap already. So they aren't being punished for winning. They're being punished for maybe not planning a little bit ahead of time for this was coming. They went all in last year and they won the title. That should be applauded. They built a team last season to win. That should be applauded for sure. They were the best team in the league. They were the champions. On the other side, I do agree with you. Yes, I think MLS should continue to open up the books to let teams spend more money, to let teams have more salary cap space to add more quality players. It's only going to make the league better. It's only going to make the product on the field better. I would love to see less restrictions and a bigger budget for every team, no doubt about it.
Yeah, we mentioned in the intro, you're obviously one of Orange County's favorite sons with OCSC's long-term lease on a beautiful, 5,500-seat stadium, Irvine Great Park with its 24-plus soccer fields, and Irvine Strikers being known as one of the top youth clubs around the country. What's your take on how the local soccer community has evolved since you grew up in Huntington Beach and played, you know, PDL with OC Blue Star?
Yeah, listen, night and day from everything, from Major League Soccer to USL Championship to League One to League Two, all the way down. I see it in the Open Cup playing with the USL League Two team. It's amazing. And I think Major League Soccer welcomes the growth of all soccer in America. We need different levels of the sport to be played. I love the stadium over in Orange County. I've been there a few times, got to play there as well a couple of times with the Galaxy and once in the Open Cup. So to even think when I was a kid that there would be like a minor league stadium right down the road from where I grew up and the fans are packing this place and enjoying it week in and week out is just amazing.
Now, speaking of OCSC, we'd be remiss not to ask you about the USL's plans to operate a new league at MLS level and implement promotion relegation between its top three flights. Like, do you get the sense that people around MLS feel threatened by these moves? And how do you personally feel that this might affect the game in North America?
No, I don't think that MLS is threatened by the USL. I think they welcome and are encouraged by the growth of the sport in the United States. I think competition often leads to better product. And if there is more competition for Major League Soccer, even within our own country, I think you might see the owners, like I mentioned earlier, open up the books, spend a little bit more, and maybe roster restrictions come down a little bit. I don't know. I can't predict the future, but I think that everybody here in the States is encouraged by the growth of our sport for sure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Moving outside of the club level, let's go to some general questions, if we may. Just a couple more left. With you being a former U.S. international, we got to ask you about the current state of the men's team. Obviously, the Nations League disappointment looms large with the World Cup just over a year away. At the same time, Jesse Marsh is in the news saying that he's no longer available to U.S. soccer if they were going to make a coaching change. What's your take on the current state of the team? Are you feeling calm, panicked, somewhere in between?
Neither calm nor panicked, but I would say disappointed in the current moment, just based on the way we played in the last two Nations Leagues game. I was in the house on Thursday night for the semifinal with my wife and kids, and we just walked away disappointed. And I was in a suite with a bunch of former U.S. men's national team players, and I think all of us had the same feeling, like, what was that? Where was the heart? Where was the determination from the players on the field? Or the courage or the pride to wear the U.S. men's national team jersey. So listen, I know I wasn't perfect as a U.S. men's national team player, but I feel like most of the guys I played with gave everything they had and realized how special it was to play for the U.S. men's national team any opportunity we got. So I'd love to see more fight because, listen, as Americans, we are used to that. We are used to the baseline being a tough team to play against that plays with determination and pride. And so if we just saw a little bit more of that, that's a team that we're all going to rally around in 2026, obviously with the World Cup in our home country.
Sasha, let's give you a quick second to be reminiscent here. You represented the U.S. men's national team 50 times, three league titles in Belgium, MLS Supporters Shield, All-Star, Best 11. You're now Des Moines, Iowa's favorite son. Looking back on your professional career, which is still going, are there a couple of moments that stand out for you as really like, those are the highlights of my career, things you'll take with you?
Yeah, definitely. Off the top of my head, I can say 2008 Olympics was a big one. That just, you know, getting to play for my country on the world stage was awesome. I grew up watching the Olympics and not even watching soccer in the Olympics, just watching like sprinting and swimming and all the big events and the dream team. So to be able to walk in the opening ceremonies alongside a bunch of NBA players and then to score a couple goals in Beijing was awesome. Winning my first title at Anderlecht, which then meant my next season, I got to play in the Champions League for the first time. So my first game in the Champions League at the San Siro against AC Milan is a moment that I'll never forget. Those two really stand out to me. Obviously, winning the Supporter Shield with the Red Bulls was a great moment as well. I think I'm just very grateful to have been able to play at the highest level for 17 years and live some of the moments that I got to live. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention My first USA versus Mexico game in 2009 in Columbus, a World Cup qualifier, which we won 2-0, of course. Listen, I grew up in Southern California, bunch of Mexican friends, played with a bunch of Mexican-American kids. The amount of shit that was talked every time the USA played against Mexico. And so to be able to play in that rivalry and get a win and start and play, you know, I think I played 86 minutes in that game. That's something I'll never forget.
That's awesome. And we're privileged to have gotten to see you play in those games. Thank you for that trip down memory lane for us, you know, on the other side of the field, up in the stands. And I just want to say thank you on behalf of myself, our producer Gunner, obviously JR. Thank you so much for your time and keep up the good work with Apple TV's season pass.
No worries. I appreciate you guys. You know, I think just all the hard work you guys put in to cover soccer in Southern California is awesome. So thank you guys.
Thank you. Have a great one. All right. Transitioning on over to Dialogue with the Galaxy, and Sasha Kleshin spoke a lot of really good things. But before we do that, McGrath Productions is the official match photography provider to your MASL team, the Empire Strikers. They service much of Orange County and Los Angeles County and the Inland Empire as well. For all your commercial photography needs, visit McGrath-Productions.com. That's McGrath-Productions.com or McGrath_Productions on Instagram. All right. The Galaxy headed into Allianz Field to take on the Loons of Minnesota. A homecoming for Christian Ramirez. The man was a legend. If there's anybody that deserves a statue with Minnesota United, it would be him. Doing things during the NASL days, doing things through the MLS days. And well, he took care of some business against the Loons. Let's go into that, Tim. You're the resident Galaxy expert here. Let's get into the ball game.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this last time, that the encouraging words that were coming out of Greg Vanney were coming in, and how they've played the last three games now against Herediano, you know, last week, and then this past weekend against the Loons. They're now on a three-game unbeaten streak. And this is a big deal, and especially with Christian Ramirez coming in, the encouraging views that we have been talking about. This is another one. You know, they did give up a late penalty that was kind of a little cheap, if you want to call it that. But to come back just 3 minutes later to get that late goal, and we'll get into this, but I think you mentioned it a second ago, Christian Ramirez coming home, going to a homecoming, looking for not that statue, but looking to be, a speed burner in this game and turn Minnesota into a bunch of statues and put a biscuit in the basket. And that's exactly what he did off of a beautiful little Mickey Yamane just chip that had basically no speed to it. Goalkeeper comes down, and Ramirez said in the post game, he goes, I knew where the keeper was going to be, even though I wasn't looking at him. Did a little flick header. It's in the far post, and it was just brilliant.
Brilliant indeed.
Yeah, I mean, Billy. I mean, you tell me. I mean, you're the LAFC dude, and even you're saying it's a brilliant goal.
Look, in the third minute when he was completely off the mark, I did see shades of Christian Ramirez wearing black and gold because he was totally off the mark. But Minnesota United gave a nice run. There is a goalkeeper controversy. We talked about this with Sasha Kleshin, and he mentioned this is all on Greg Vanney. You got a player in the likes of JT Marcinkowski. You got Mitrovic, and you got John McCarthy. John McCarthy didn't look good on that first goal. In fact, he bobbled it. But the sequence of events that led to that goal, interesting. Six touches between both sides before the ball hit the pitch. J-Mac doesn't really get a full handle on it. Kelvin Yeboah, his first of two goals, and he certainly got a gimme goal to open up that day, huh, Scarf?
Listen, Kelvin Yeboah is as good of a talent as there is in Major League Soccer. We talked about that when we were previewing when LAFC had to play them. But I just want to say to all the Galaxy supporters out there that the sky is not falling. The reason why I really felt like the Galaxy were going to win the title last year was one simple thing. The Galaxy kept finding points from situations where they had no business getting any points. Look at the last match against Portland, down in the 81st minute on the road in Portland. They get a goal from Christian Ramirez. And after they give up that backbreaker second goal to Kelvin Yeboah, they come back and Garces gets one in the 90th minute, again on the road. This could be the start of something for all the Galaxy supporters out there to hang their hat on. Yes, you want to beat teams like Portland and Minnesota, not draw them, but it's on the road. And again, they're rescuing points from places where there weren't points to begin with.
You're 100% right. I mean, picking up wins at home, which honestly hasn't been easy this season, but then at least picking up points on the road, that's a big thing. And look, John McCarthy, I would say, other than that bobble that he had in the first half, had a great game, because if you go to that 76th minute, he took care of some business, absolutely silencing Olunwane on a couple of occasions when he was wide open. So a very gritty and gutsy performance. You got to chalk this up as a win for the morale column. Galaxy played back and forth with a pretty good Loon squad. And as Sasha said in the interview, Joseph Payne's still set to come back. He comes back. You know, a lot of the league needs to pay attention. And then obviously down the road, Ricky Pooch, but still have to be careful before relying completely on Ricky. Now, coming up for the Galaxy, they're going to take on an Orlando City side that is, despite their record of 2-1-2, this is one of the best goal scoring teams in all of Major League Soccer right now. 13 total goals on the season. They're averaging 2.6. That's the most out of anybody in this league. They're a much better team at home than they are on the road. But Tim, how are you looking at this one on the preview against Orlando?
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. They're coming off of a 4-1 trouncing of DC United, and it really was a trouncing. They looked far better than DC, and DC is a decent team. They're not the best in the league, but they're also not bottom scrapers. And they're coming in with these 13 goals. You got the leading scorer with 4 goals and assists. You got a guy right behind him that's got 3 baggers as well. And so you're going to have to stop 2 main guys that are coming in. You know, you've got Martin Ojeda with a couple, 3 of them. And help me out on this one, Philly, because I've got it, but I think it's Marco Pusilic.
Pass. 4 and goals for the man. For 4 goals for Marco. Yes, he is their leading scorer. But let's not forget about Alex Friedman as well. He's also a threat. Two goals and a dime. Luis Muriel as well with 2 assists. This is a team that's talented. And let's also not forget in the midfield, they have a former player from LAFC that's pretty talented in the midfield, and that of Edward Atuesta.
Yeah, and Atuesta is going to be, he's going to play hard. He's going to come in. He's going to do what Atuesta did here in L.A. And I think the biggest thing that they're going to have
Which
to
time.
Do. Yeah, exactly. And I think what's going to happen, you can help me out here, Scarf, is they're going to have to, the Galaxy are going to have to not be flat-footed at any point in this game, right? They came out flat-footed in the first 20 minutes of that second half against the Loons. And if they do that, it's not going to be, you know, 1-0 down. It's going to be 3-0 down.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for them is they've had 7 shots on target total in the last 2 matches. They've got to find a way to put it on the keeper for sure. They've got a gauntlet coming up too after Orlando City. They got Tigres twice and away at RSL. It is a rough stretch for the Galaxy. But you know what? I think it could be a get-right game for them too.
Yep, and that's going to move us on over from Galaxy. Tim, Orange County Soccer Club taking on Monterey Bay. Not a great performance by the boys from behind the orange curtain.
No, it definitely wasn't. And I've reviewed the tape a couple of times and I was watching it live. And it's, you know, this was a tough one because they were actually playing reasonably great, but they were playing reasonably well. And it's like a slightly less than even first half that turned really poor in the second. Tom Brewitt and Colin Schottler were definitely the best guys on the pitch for Orange County. But again, you talk about flat-footed with the Galaxy that we were just talking about. They came out really flat-footed in the second half. And Elijah Paul gets Monterey Bay on the scoreboard in the 60 minute on a really, really nice through ball. And one times it passed Schottler. Colin didn't have a whole lot of help on the defense on that one. And the problem really mounted just 5 minutes later. Ryan Dogman takes a red card, and it's just an atrocious red card. You can't take this card. He's already had a yellow card earlier in the season. And I'm okay with yellow cards. But when you go and you try to collect a ball out of the air at the shoulder height of the attacking player from Monterey, you're going to take him out. And that's what he did. He went studs up into the guy's space and he gets a straight red and out the door he goes. And short order after that, Monterey Bay comes in, really gets a couple of other goals. And what I really liked about this Philly and Scarf is that the team was listening to Coach Stone. So while it was a 3-0 goose egg, right? The reality of this is Orange County actually played much better than the scoreline dictates. And truth be told, in that 81st minute, they should have put one back on when it was only 2-0 down, Scarf.
Yeah, and look, the hardest part is when a team goes down a man, it changes everything that you want to do. It doesn't matter how you were playing before that. And to have to play 25 minutes down a man, and the problem was Monterey answered so quickly, right? It was just, 9 minutes or so after that where they were able to get one. It really does break you a little bit. But, you know, what I do love about the way that Orange County responded is that you mentioned it, 81st minute, they should have got one back. And honestly, they looked an equal side, even though they were playing down a man for the last 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And we'll talk about Las Vegas, in the next episode, because they've got this weekend off. But one of the other things, and this has been a really hot topic in USL Championship, is the pro relegation. Right? The promotion and relegation. This has been crazy. Everybody's been talking about it. And I want to see what it's really, again, it's not going to happen for 3-4 years. But I think long terms, 8-9 years down the road, this could really cause some issues for USA Soccer in the way of what does MLS do? Do they have a fighting chance? Are they going to go to pro relegation too? Especially after San Diego just spent half $1 billion on a franchise.
Well, to quote the band ABBA, money, money, money must be funny in the rich man's world. And I say that because MLS is where the money is. USL can have the pro rel all they want, but at the end of the day, if the product is inferior compared to Major League Soccer, does it really matter? It's all a matter of the product on the pitch. Yes, the community aspect of things, I get all that, but to me, the stars are going to come to Major League Soccer. We'll see how USL continues to add some money and some talent to it, but ultimately, I don't think MLS is sweating it. At the same time, I think they're excited that there's going to be some competition. And as far as money is concerned, folks, we got to pay some bills. So that means sponsorship reads. Soccer in 60 is brought to you by National Core, one of the nation's largest non-for-profit affordable housing developers and a proud sponsor of your MASL team, the Empire Strikers. At National Core, they believe that soccer has the power to transform lives just like they do. They believe in building strong communities on and off the field. To learn more about National Core and their mission, go to nationalcore.org. All right. Empire Strikers, their final game of the regular season. The final game of the regular season, final game possibly under the bright lights of Toyota Arena for Israel Cisse, that being unless the Empire Strikers can find a way into the Ron Newman Cup Finals, because as we know, the playoffs will be at Oceanside at Front Wave. And the Empire has a gargantuan task ahead of them, mainly because of the fact that they still haven't clinched a playoff spot yet. In front of a ruckus crowd of 7,387, that's right, you don't need to clean your ears. That's exactly the amount of people that were in attendance. It was loud. It was proud. It was a game that was, well, at one point lopsided, but it got really competitive in the fourth quarter. Right, Scarf?
Yeah, Philly, look, 3 straight goals. I didn't think you were allowed to wear a backpack on the pitch, but that's absolutely what Abdul Mansouri did. He put everybody in that thing back there. 3 straight goals, and it was after Izzy Cisse went down with the injury. Abdul looked over at the bench and said, "I got you, fam." 3 straight goals, but you know what? They died by the sword again. It's keeping that keeper all the way up. I mean, Philly, you were calling it. You were there, 7,400 in the building, and then to lose on a three-quarters pitch goal like that. Oh.
I mean, that's the most indoor soccer of indoor soccer things that could have happened. I mean, at some point, the Empire Strikers looked dead in the water, and you said it. When Israel Cisse went down with the high ankle sprain, that lit a fire under this entire team because San Diego was dominating. Not so much as far as effort, because the Empire Strikers had the lion's share of shots. If you go through the entirety of the game, 46 shots by the Empire, 16 of San Diego. But a lot of the goals came later on. Justin Stinson would have a hat trick, and Abdul Mansere would single-handedly, like you said, put the Ontario Fury, or the Empire Fury, I'm rocking that right here if you're watching, on his back and had arguably his best game of his career. But the irony in that Izzy's former teammate, Leo de Oliveira, gets the game-winning goal when Harold Hansen lost the ball three-quarters of the length. That silences the crowd, silences everybody. But I'll tell you this, despite the fact that the Fury, I'm going to call them the Fury because that's what they were, left some points on the table, they did manage to claw one back. And in front of that big of a crowd, they really got to see how impressive indoor soccer can be. 6-1 at one point, fellas. 6-1 in most games, most sports. That would be all that she wrote. But Tim, I would say it was a big win for the Strikers, despite the fact that they didn't actually get the full win itself.
I'm right there with you, buddy, because I was sitting up in the press box at halftime and I couldn't deal with it anymore. There were 7,400 plus in the building. I had to go down and be with the people. So I went down right down about 5-6 rows off the pitch. And I was screaming and yelling just like everybody else. And if anybody was there, it was disappointing to lose on a three-quarter pitch shot. But the reality was 7,400 people got to really see what indoor soccer is really, truly about. And you said it. At one point, they were leading 8-7. They came back from 6-1 down to 8-7 up, gave up a late goal, and then gave up the game winner in overtime. But at the end of the day, the Strikers could have rolled over like a turtle and just sat there and died. But they knew that they couldn't because there's too much pride on this team, Scarf.
And there was a bit of controversy attached to all of that, right, Scarf? I'm pretty sure that's what you were going to talk about.
Well, Billy, let me ask you a question. You always bring up on the broadcast, there's that MASL show that looks at controversial calls the day after or during
under
the
week. Review.
Harold Hansen, the former Portland Timbers product, gets taken down. I mean, maliciously. Should it have been a foul? The ball that led to Leo de Oliveira scoring the goal came from a foul, says our producer Gunner, says me, says the Empire Strikers / Empire Fury fans that were in the building. But I have to ask you, the resident expert of the Empire Strikers, was it a foul?
If you look at it from all the different angles, yeah, I would say it was a foul. And it's unfortunate that the way the rules are, the officials weren't able to go back to the monitor to review. When it comes down to golden goal, it should be reviewable. In all of the major sports, big moments are easily reviewable. Heck, it's March. It's March Madness. Some of the arguments that people have is that the officials scrutinize every little change of possession, every little out of bounds. One would argue that this should be the case as far as MASL is concerned. And with the playoffs on the horizon, that's something that truly does need to be looked at. And speaking of playoffs, Scarf, if you had a final thought, you know, we got to talk about the Strikers and their shot at playoffs.
No, I totally agree. I was going to segue into that. Here's the thing. That foul could cost them a playoff spot. I mean, they're looking in their rear view right now at a club that's coming from behind them. They could very well, if they don't win this match is it Dallas, right? Yeah, they're going to Dallas. If they don't win this match at Dallas, and thank goodness it's Dallas, then they've got to let another team do the work for them. Dallas losing 3 straight into this match is huge for the Empire. But Philly, I'm looking over my shoulder. I'm looking in the rear view. I'm looking at the teams ahead of me going, man, everybody kind of got right at the time where we had to play Chihuahua and San Diego a whole bunch of times.
And that's the argument, is you're playing against those teams more so than anybody else. But look, if you want to be a champ, you got to beat teams that are champs. And quite honestly, the Savage and the Sockers are the gold standard in indoor soccer and have been for a number of years. You could look at the Empire's loss to Dallas on the road a couple of months ago. That would have been a different story. We might have clinched at that point. But going into Allen, Texas, to take on the Sidekicks, this is a team that's 6-17 and oh, struggling here with nothing really to play for other than pride. Now, my fear is the following. The Tacoma Stars are going to San Diego. San Diego doesn't lose at home. But historically, when San Diego has played their best players on the latter part games of the season, they've gotten hurt, which has had implications when it comes to the playoffs. I doubt that Phil Salvaggio and the Sockers are going to throw their best team forward when it comes to the Stars, because it doesn't really matter for them at the end of the day. And then as far as the other team competing, the St. Louis Ambush, as of last night, or as of 2 days ago, I should say, they beat the Dallas Sidekicks for their fourth straight win. They've never done that in franchise history, but it's not going to get any easy for them. They host the Milwaukee Wave. Perhaps they beat them there. Great. They would still need to beat them on the road. And I'll tell you what, they're going to have a really tough time taking on Milwaukee, because it's going to be a very important night. Giuliano, Jules, the head coach of the Milwaukee Wave, is getting his jersey retired that weekend. You think the Wave are going to allow that to happen with a loss to St. Louis? I highly, highly doubt that. So it's still up for grabs, but the Empire does control their fate. If they win, they're in, and that's all that we have to say about that. Now, that being the case, let's move on over to Angel City FC. Much to the dismay of many of you, I know y'all were looking forward to seeing Nina Kiefer or Amanda the Panda Filiman, but unfortunately, you're going to have to deal with Philly Timmy K and the Scarf. So let's take a look at Angel City's game. They had the Friday game against the Portland Thorns. Let's talk about that one, Scarf.
Yeah, Philly, if I could sing, I'd sing The Kids Are All Right by The Who, because that
not the offspring.
Angel City season is all about. We're talking about Alyssa Thompson, Giselle Thompson, and Kennedy Fuller. Look, Angel City has started off their season with a pair of 1-1 draws that have been okay at best, but they've found an almost star in goal in Angelina Anderson, who just got a call in as a practice player for the U.S. Women's National Team. And these three young kids, Giselle Thompson, Alyssa Thompson, and Kennedy Fuller, are literally doing all the work. Fuller to Alyssa for their only goal against San Diego. Giselle to Fuller for their only goal against the Thorns. I mean, Sydney LaRue hasn't played a minute yet this season. Kristen Press has played 14 more minutes than the three of us have for Angel City this season. So they are relying on these young kids. And so far, it's been okay for Angel City.
Yeah, and we've talked about this quite a bit on the show about, are they putting too much pressure on these kids? Because last year they were trying as hard as they could, right? And they were really coming into their own towards the end of last season. Now you look at them this year, and you said it, they're putting the team in their backpack to steal one from you. And they are playing far better than anybody expected, in my opinion, without a coach. They don't have a full-time coach yet. And I'm going to drive this home until July 5th when they finally hire a coach. But I understand that the team has relied on the kids, and the kids, they are all right.
Yeah, and here's the crazy part. They set a record in their first match against San Diego as the youngest starting 11 in NWSL history. And all they did next match is to go out and break it again against the Portland Thorns. I mean, it's a kind of historic thing that's going on with Angel City right now. You do have some veterans, obviously props to Sarah Gordon. She's hit the 10,000 minute mark now for Angel City. But you look, and they're getting good play from Riley Tiernan. Alana Kennedy has had a great start to the season. But what does worry me just a little bit is that only four players have registered a shot on target through the first two matches. So we might need to find a little bit more from Claire Emsley. We might need to find, hopefully, Kristen Press can get her goal-scoring ways back on target. And whatever Sydney LaRue is going through right now, obviously, we're in her corner. We want her to be able to get through it and get back out on the pitch if she can. But those names that you see on the back of the jerseys for the first couple seasons, Press and LaRue, you're starting to see a lot more Thompson and Fuller jerseys throughout BMO Stadium. That's for sure.
I mean, is that a surprise considering like how these girls have been heralded and how good they really are? No surprise there whatsoever. I love the fact that the kids are going out there and taking care of business. We had Kennedy Fuller on last season. She was just happy to be here in terms of like being in the NWSL, not necessarily soccer in 60, but I know everybody's that comes on the show tends to do well. If you look at the statistics, anybody that's come on soccer in 60 has actually had a really good game within a short period of time. Go back to it, whether it be Kennedy Fuller, whether it be Colin Shuttler. I mean, history repeats itself. But Kennedy Fuller right now is a veteran, and she scored a really big goal in the ninth minute. It is concerning that they're not finding that many shots on target. But look, starting the season off on the road, you and I, Scarf, have been to Portland. We know how ruckus of an environment that could be in. That's one of the best atmospheres in the NWSL. And if we're going to talk about how the kids, the Thompsons, the Fullers, the Macy's, whoever you want to talk about, if they could go into that kind of environment and squeak out a result, regardless of whether they scored first and conceded later on, that to me is a big victory. The question is going to be, though, how things are going to change when they actually do get a head coach coming forward that might manipulate or change the system that currently is. But I would say, taking 2 points, against San Diego at home, fine. But on the road to Portland, that's a big deal because Turner scored in the 30th minute for Portland. They had 9 shots on target, 21 shots within their entirety. Angel City FC was able to absorb that and hold on to for the point. That, to me, is a really big deal.
Yeah, look, I completely agree that points on the road are always good. And look, it's very early in the season, but it doesn't look like the NWSL is as, there's not as much parity in the NWSL this year as there has been in years past. I think the two juggernauts at the top are going to be there for quite a bit, so I don't expect any changes at the top. But after 2 draws in their first 2 matches, to be sitting in a playoff spot, which Angel City is, and I think they're going to have to watch over the course of the entire season as they head, especially this Sunday, to take on the Seattle Reign at their home friendly home confines of BMO, their first home match. I think it could be a really big thing for them if they're able to get things right at home.
I'm with you there, because if like you said, the Fullers, the Macy's, and the goalkeepers put everything together, I think it's a very strong chance of them putting their first W on the board. The only thing that's concerning me is the number of shots that they're giving up. In this last game, they had 10 total shots and only 5 were on frame. And you mentioned it, Philly, 21 total shots, 18, 9 on target. That is a concern to me in that they're just giving up way too many shots. If they can get in some more blocks, if they can play a little bit tighter defense, but they need to do that, keep the ball out of the net for first. But they also have to find a few more goals on this other side. And you said it, Scarf. It's early, but the big thing was, they're got to get more shots on frame.
Yeah, if they don't get more shots on frame, we'll be taking more shots off frame. Thirsty Thursday in full effect. Yeah, Madison's Curry at Seattle. We had her on the show. So that's going to be an interesting scenario. Yeah, look, Seattle's a very tough team defensively. They really are. They got some great players, Fishlock being one of them. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be easy for them to pick up a dub against Seattle. But if they can, at the very least, pick up a point, I would say that this team is for real. There wasn't much, I don't want to say there wasn't much hype or hope at the end of the day, but when you don't have a coach, there's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of craziness going on. We didn't know what kind of team to expect. I'd say they're off to a fairly good start, but Seattle will really be a good indicator as to how this current rendition of Angel City FC really does look. And with that being the case, let's transition on over to our next segment. The best 11. For those of you that are new to the show, we choose the best 11 based on all the teams that compete that we cover, of course, LAFC, the LA Galaxy, Empire Strikers, Angel City, Orange County SC. So let's take a look at our players that made this list. And then we're talking single game performances, of course, from the date times of March 20th through the 26th. We'll tell you who is on the list And we'll obviously debate it because I know the scarf is feeling mildly chicken poxy, very itchy to give his opinion. In between the sticks, Hugo Lloris for his performance for LAFC at Kansas City. I think this is no question about it. No clean brainer. Sheet, he's got to have that. Your defenders, Aaron Long, Ryan Hollingshead representing LAFC, Mickey Amane, Julian Aude of the Galaxy, Giselle Thompson of Angel City, Robert Berto Palmer of the Empire, your midfielders, Mark Delgado, Igor Jesus, and Justin the Stinger Stinson, and forward Abdul Mansoure with the Hattie against San Diego. Stinson too had a Hattie. Folks, let's open this up to dialogue. And since the scarf is itching to talk, Tim, you start us off.
My biggest thing is I'm shocked that Christian Ramirez is not on this list. I get it. Mickey Amane, he's got the great assist. He's got the great helper, but somebody had to put the ball in the back of the net. I'm shocked at that. And Julian Aude too, a little bit of a surprise. And this is the thing. This is why we get to debate it. It's all not Google and Footbot. It's all these other things. It's us and yelling at each other.
Listen, Kennedy Fuller, people, first of all, she gets snubbed for not getting called into the U23 U.S. Women's National Team pool. And now, here on Soccer in 60, we snub her and do her the disservice of not having her on the best 11. What is it going to take for Kennedy Fuller to get some love around here? She is my second favorite player in all of the NWSL because I don't know who can take Rose Lavelle's heart from mine, but Kennedy Fuller is the next big thing, and I can't believe she's not on it. She had the goal, her only second goal in NWSL play against the Thorns. It was huge. And look, I think you could make a case, while I love Ugo, and Ugo should be there, Angelita Anderson has had a couple very good matches to start the year, 13 saves through the first two matches for Angelita Anderson. Something to watch, but I know in the little tiny fine print down there, I'm old, so I can barely read that down there. Kennedy Fuller's name is down there. It should be up there in the best 11. Come on.
And I'm going to bring this up because I have to. At this point, it's become consistent. Where is Olivier Giroud? Why is Olivier Giroud not on this list? Why isn't he in contention? Does anybody even care?
Did he
play? I don't anymore. Does he play anymore? It's been the most miraculous descent from glory. I think if we're going to quote things, it's his rise from Bel Air to the hood. What a terrible, terrible tenure that Olivier Giroud has had. But Hugo Lloris with the clean sheet, Justin Stinson unquestionable with the hat trick, Abdul Mansoure with the hat trick as well. Big time plays by the Empire strikers. And I would say, is there anybody on this list that you completely disagree with before we head out of this episode? Tim, you first. Real quick, one player, and then quick to scarf.
No, I think it's Julian Aude. I think you gotta take him out, and you gotta put Christian Ramirez in there.
Scarf?
I completely agree. Julian Aude's got to go. I love Christian Ramirez, but you know what I'm going to say. Kennedy Fuller, come on.
All right, fair enough. I'm good with all this. All right, folks, that's all the time that we have. We certainly want to say thank you for tuning in to Soccer on 60, whether it be on 1490 AM KMET ABC Radio, whether it had been on the Empire Strikers YouTube channel, whether it had been on Apple or Spotify or SoundCloud or the other podcasting platforms that you utilize. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you promote. Help us out. We're trying to grow the show. We've got so many unbelievable guests ahead of us going forward in the season, and we certainly have a good time. Hopefully you get to get your thirsty Thursday footy fix. On behalf of myself, Christian Philly Filliman, Timmy K, JR the Scarf Liebert, and our producer Gunnar Burnt and our other producer Christian, want to say thank you. You were watching Soccer in 60.